Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger. As always, I'm here with producer Jason DeFilippo. On the Jordan Harbinger Show, we decode the stories, secrets, and skills of the world's most brilliant and interesting people and turn their wisdom into practical advice that you can use to impact your own life and those around you. We'll help you see the matrix when it comes to how these amazing people think and behave, because I want you to become a better thinker. And today, Ryan Holiday. Him and I have been friends for years, and if you listen to a lot of different podcasts, he's certainly made the rounds recently. I wanted to have a different sort of conversation with him instead of the same stoicism that everyone else has been drilling into lately. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just think there's more room for some other topics here, and if you agree, then listen on. It's just what we did today on the show. Today, you'll hear us discuss how successful people learn to process feedback, who and what to listen to in order to improve and move forward. We'll also uncover why self-awareness is a secret weapon of some of the highest performing people you'll meet, and what can keep us striving and moving upward in a world where it's way too easy to compare ourselves to one another and beat ourselves up in the process. Again, this is a much more free-form and offbeat conversation with Ryan, and I think that's refreshing these days, especially since he's been hammering away on his book tour. He's a really smart guy. I'm so grateful we got this amount of time with him here in studio, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you all think of this one. If you want to know how I managed to get all of these great folks in my circle, well, I use systems and tiny habits, and I do it very consistently, and it's just a few minutes a day. I'm teaching you how to do that for free. Check out 6-Minute Networking. That's over at jordanharbinger.com/course. And by the way, most of the guests on the show, they subscribe to the course and the newsletter. So come join us and you'll be in great company. All right, here's Ryan Holiday. I do this to myself all the freaking time.
Yeah.
I don't compare myself to somebody who started when I do. I compare myself either to somebody who started 20 years before me, or I compare myself to like somebody who started a year ago but has somehow managed to get the spotlight for 2 seconds.
Right.
And I go, oh my God, my life is over. This person got featured on something.
Yes.
And now,
right.
why even try?
Or you go like, oh man, like this person's getting this thing. And you're like, but I've also gotten that thing. Why can't they also get it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you not only like want things that you don't have or you're jealous of, but you're also just like territorial about.
Yeah.
And like, it's not like a zero sum game. Like, I have to think about this with authors all the time. Like, so-and-so's book blowing up and selling millions of copies. And not only doesn't hurt me, but a bunch of those people probably weren't readers before. And now maybe they are readers. And now like,
sure. Like, wow. I bought this book and it was great. Other people who've also bought that recommend this Ryan Holiday book. Maybe I should get that. Nobody's like, oh, I already have a book, so I don't need any more.
Yes, yes.
I'm all set
and
on
they
books.
If they do, they're probably not like your idea. They're not
yeah.
So they're a great customer.
Yeah, the person who listens or like only watches one YouTube video a month, probably not exactly your...
I've listened to a podcast.
Yeah.
Like, that's not who you're after.
No.
Yeah.
No. People who listen, well, if as long as they only listen to mine, fine. That's the thing. I'll go like, oh, what other shows do you listen to? And if they have like 10, I'm like, screw this person. You're not a real fan. You're spreading your time out among other people who also create good work. How dare you?
Right.
It makes no sense. It's like a very illogical internet-based
thing. Yeah, right. It's like, look, if you're Coke and they're Pepsi, that makes sense. Although even those, they're totally interchangeable and nobody cares. You forget that, like, actually, you're really in a race against people not listening to podcasts at all.
Yeah.
Or not buying books at all. And so... it's not like, oh, they bought James Clear's book, so they're not going to buy mine. That's not that's not what's happening at all.
They're like, going to buy all of them, and then they're not going to read any of them.
Right.
And you're still going to get a right. What's that stat, though? Like 83%+ of books that get purchased don't get read or something like that? Or it's like
sure
a huge majority.
Well, yeah, sometimes people go, it must be so weird being famous. And it's like, okay, there's famous, and then there's like being an author.
Yeah.
Like, even if you sold lots of books, like people don't know what your name is. Even if you sold lots of books, how many people have bothered to read them?
Yeah.
How many people have looked at the name on the cover? How many people have flipped all the way to the back and looked at the photo? It's like 5%. Like, it is not a problem.
At your level, it's got to be name recognition, right? Where people go, Ryan Holiday, like, oh, I think I've read one of your books. Like, that must happen at some point.
It does.
Yeah.
Every once in a while. I mean, certainly when you start, the worst part is they go like, oh, what do you do? And you go like, I'm an author. And then they go, would I have read any of your books? And it's like, No.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't have unless you have good
taste. And now you're humiliated. It's like, because like the joke is like, oh, tell me one thing you've done in your life that I've heard of. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like,
good point.
Right? Like, if I heard any of the insurance policies that you sold, it's like the answer is no. But like, if you have a public facing thing, it feels
that's out. True. We have to, people think if you're in any sort of public facing field, you're automatically measured by your notoriety.
Yes, which by is, your name recognition amongst total strangers,
yeah.
Not like how successful are you in your niche.
Yeah, good point. I didn't even think about that. Because, of course, like, would you have read any of the books? I don't know. Do you read books that are for smart people? Like, it's not my fault if you don't. It's not my fault. I'm not less because you haven't seen my book.
I mean, the other day, someone recommended this book to me, and I never heard of it, and I pulled it up on Amazon. It had 16,000 reviews.
Oh,
and you're like, that's like 10 million copies? That's
yeah.
Like, I'd never even heard of this person. And so, like, it's not that he's not successful. It's that I'm not clued in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you end up using these, like, metrics that maybe would make sense when there used to be, like, 10 people making a living writing books.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, that's not how it is anymore.
It's like TV. Everyone watched Larry King, and people wrote, oh, during Larry King Live, this news event happened. Now no one's like, during the time that Ryan Holiday and Jordan Harbinger did a Facebook Live, this thing happened. Like, no one would realistically ever care about that. You've done a lot of things that a lot of people are maybe envious of or jealous of or want to do or say they want to do but never actually wanted to do. One of which is figure out maybe what you wanted to do for a living early.
I guess,
yeah.
No, that is an interesting thing, like, to go to the point about, like, comparing yourself against other people. People are like, I'm 28, I want to be an author, or, like, my book came out, didn't do well. And it's like, when I was 28, I had 9 years of experience.
Mm-hmm.
You have to compare yourself against people who are in your peer group and your age bracket for, like, the amount of years you've been doing it or reps you have, because that's the only measurement that really counts. The fact that I figured out that I kind of wanted to be a writer and then I started researching for a writer in, like, before I turned 20-ish, it wasn't, like, a little advantage. It was, like, an exponentially large advantage. And, like, every year those returns are compounding. It's like you start saving for retirement early. So you get to that magical point where the grass starts to go like that.
Yeah.
So it is important, but it's not the age that you started at that's important. It's the time that's elapsed since that point. It has no magical part that I was 20 when I started. It's the 8 years, or now it's 12 years. Like, that's the point. So you could start when you're 30. You'll just hit that inflection point in your 40s.
Yeah, that's true. I wasn't really thinking about radio or interviewing or anything. And then I started the show when I was, I think, 26. But then I didn't really think, like, I'm interviewing people. I was just, like, I was screwing around.
Sure.
And then I interviewed Robert Greene, like, 7 years in. And he's like, hey, you're really good at interviewing. And I was like, well, if he thinks I'm good at it, then maybe I should take it more seriously.
Yeah.
Then I started to do that. And it still took me, like, 4 years after that to be like, oh, this is how professionals prepare for an interview. They actually read the book.
I think there is a moment where, let's say the 10,000-hour theory. And I know there's, like,
back and forth on that.
Back and forth. But the general idea that it takes a lot of hours to become really good at something, mm-hmm. I think that's pretty indisputable.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I put up my first blog, like, the day I graduated from high school. So let's say it's, like, 2005. Let's say I really didn't get super serious about it until 2006. And then my first book deal happened. And I started writing my first book in, like, 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, six-ish years.
Which is actually a really long time when you're in your 20s.
Oh, yeah, of
now,
course.
Now I'm in my late 30s, so I'm like, oh, I've known Jen for, wow, I've known her for 7 years. Ah, it's a pretty long time. But when you're in your 20s, you haven't even been a functional adult for more than 5 or 6 years.
Well, kids do that to you, too, because, like, my son is now 3, and so now I think about, like, what my other son will be like in mm-hmm. 3 years. Like, just the idea that I can think in a 3-year chunk was not a chunk of time I could comprehend before. But so I did those 6 years. I didn't really know I was doing 6 years. In retrospect, it's obvious I was paying 6 years of dues.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also, like, I just thought I was writing. Like, I was writing. I was having some success, not success. I was seeing the audience tick up every day. So let's say there's, like, those 6 years. Then the book came out, and you start getting sort of rewards and recognition. Like, at some point, like, you had, I don't know the exact conversation I had with someone, but it was like, at some point, I decided I was consciously going to be putting in those hours. Like, I'm really, in a way, a comedian thinks about getting stage time.
Yes.
Like, that's less clear for other professions. But there was at some point where I was just like, I'm going to get really good at this. Mm-hmm. And so it's really from 2012 to 2019. Those 7 years, I probably, let's say it was another 6 years. I think I got double or triple the amount of time and the amount of ROI from the time, because I was really consciously deciding to get better. And not only writing my own books, but also ghostwriting. I was like, ghostwriting because, one, it would give me some financial freedom to write my own things, but also, like, I just wanted, like, to get really good at the craft. And so now there's really nothing you could put in front of me that I would... I mean, there's things that would be hard and challenging, but there's nothing I think you could put in front of me writing-wise that I'd be like, I'm not sure I could do that. Mm-hmm. There's things that I wouldn't want to do I wouldn't do, but, like, I think I could write just about anything.
That's a big statement, right? Because... that'd be like me saying I could interview everyone, anyone.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, I don't know.
But I bet you could.
I would have to, it's sort of terrifying to think about doing that, but yeah, I could. Well,
so I bet when you first started, if I was like, okay, you can introduce the president, you'd probably be like, I could do that. And of course, you would do it.
I would figure it out, yeah.
But you would be bad at it. Like, you would listen to the tape, you'd be like, I can't believe I blew this opportunity. And then there's probably a period where you would have, like, maybe thought you weren't ready for, like, now you would do it and you would be successful at it. Is sort of what I mean.
Yeah. It's funny to look at do you ever look at old work that you've done and go, oh man, what the hell?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So I've had the weird privilege. So I wrote my first book in 2011 on my own. I didn't sell it. I just wrote it and then I sold it. And then so I worked with an editor to reshape it. It came out in 2012. Then in 2013, I did an updated revised paperback edition, which I changed some stuff. And then in 2016, after the collapse of Gawker and after the Trump election, I did a third edition of the book. So I've had this weird, unique experience of basically rewriting that book four times.
Mm-hmm.
And each time is a horrendous experience because it's like mortifyingly embarrassing.
I published this.
Like,
yeah, I worry about that.
Yeah. And what I learned from the experience is like, it's not that it's bad. Because it's not. And it's not that I'm wrong, because I'm usually not. There's definitely errors in it. But what is the most off-putting and I find the least excusable is the certainty with which I was saying whatever I was saying.
Sure.
So it was like, I might have been right, but I had not done the work to be right, you know?
Where like I have no basis for this other than confidence.
Yes. Or ego, really.
Or ego,
right?
Yeah.
Or I was right, but like my logic was shoddy or the example I was using was a weak one. Do you know what? Mm-hmm. Like, it's good, but I'm missing a lot of nuance and empathy and even-handedness. And so that's like one of the things I try to work on now is I just try to be way less certain of everything.
That makes sense. That's great. I've gotten more compassionate. Whereas before I'd be like, you know, I got to be challenging because I got to show that I have to demonstrate authority.
Yeah.
Now I don't have to do that because I realize it's my show. I kind of already have some authority.
Yeah. And you're like, why would I do gotchas?
Yeah.
Why do I need to push back? I think to me, and I talk about this a little bit in the new book, I feel like what that is, that's what confidence actually looks like. The insecurity is the need to overreach, to overstate, to like assert yourself. And the confidence is like people who will get it will get it.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's like an element of trying too hard.
Sure.
That you don't need to do once you're confident.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's a non-neediness that actually works really well, but it's really hard to fake.
I think readers, listeners, viewers or whatever, they can like taste it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I get a lot of email from older listeners that are like, hey, you went too hard on this person or you need to do more about that. And they're usually right. And the reason they're right is because they're parents and they have kids that are like my age or slightly younger. And they're like, I recognize this.
Yeah.
This is me 30 years ago. Or this is my kid who's 17. Like, you're better than that. You know, stop doing that.
I'll get emails and like the person will just be like totally wrong about something. They'll be like, oh, why'd you say this? Or you should have said this. And like, I'm more confident when I can just like not respond.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. You know, like I could just feel like, okay, you know, like, but there's the younger part of me has to like make sure to let this person know that they're wrong.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and I think the less you have of that, the better decisions you make and the less trouble you get yourself into.
Yeah. I mean, how do we get there though? That's the question, right? Because for me, it's just been getting older and getting tired of doing that, I think. Like playing it out in my head and going, so I got that person, and then they came back, and they were mad, and then I was like, oh, you're just mad because I'm right, and you know it, and then they now hate me, so I got nothing from that interaction. Like, you have to do that
right,
over
no,
and
you
over.
Send the email, and then they're never like, yes, sir.
You're right. You're right. I'm wrong. You're right. I like you more now. Having
I don't need to get into this giant tar pit.
Ugh. I was looking, the reason I brought this up, I was looking at some of my old prep. You've been on the show, I don't know, like 5 or 6 times in the past 10 years. And I was like, oh, I'll see if there was anything that I didn't ask last time that we just didn't have time for that's still interesting. And I was just like, who made this? They're fired. Whoever made this show.
Oh, your notes?
My notes. I was like, these are terrible. Like, what was I thinking? They're organized so poorly. My questions that I wrote underneath phrases from the book are just dumb. Like, they're just not good.
Interesting.
And I look at people who release, like, best of shows. You ever see a podcast and it's like, replay, best of?
Yeah.
I don't have that. Best of, that's not old stuff. That stuff is not good, in my opinion. Wow. Or it's not as good. It's certainly not best of.
Yeah. So you're that hard on yourself, you couldn't see a best of?
I can, and I'm looking, here's what's funny. On Saturday, I have a 4-hour session planned where I'm going to re-listen to a bunch of old episodes.
Yeah.
And some of them might get re-aired, like things I did with like Shaquille O'Neal and things like that. And what I'm worried about is going, oh man, none of these are good enough. But I have to be kind of careful because I'll say that about something I did a month ago.
Right.
Just because, I don't know. I'm hard on myself. I think.
No, I've had to do that with my talks. Like for the first like 4 or 5 years that I gave talks, I didn't want them filmed. And I would if they were filmed, I would never look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because I saw one, it was really bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I told myself if I just, like, pretend that it doesn't exist, I'll be better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I'm, like, I'm actually much more okay with it. I almost want it to be filmed. I'm comfortable seeing myself on camera. And I want to actively think about how I can get better at it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, I wasn't getting better because I refused to think about that I was not good, you know? And I saw this interesting, Pete Carroll is the coach of the Seahawks. He was talking about coaches love to break down film of players. And he's like, do coaches ever watch film of themselves? And so he did that one year. He like showed all the coaches, like he did like a clip of each of the coaches throughout the year. And he was like, it totally changed how they coach. So like, I'm screaming at this person.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not being who I want to be or what I was thought I was being in that moment. But it's always easier to stick your head in the sand about it.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of that.
I guess part of it comes from a good place. Like, do you really want to be a person who's like wants to listen to hours and hours of yourself talk? Like, it'd be weird if you were really into it.
That's true.
But you have to be able to do it because you want to get better.
That's true. I hear about guys like Dave Letterman, something about him going home every night, watching tape of the show, shredding himself, beating himself up, being absolutely horrible to himself. And wasn't that show on like 5 nights a week?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, doing that to yourself.
It can't be healthy.
It can't be healthy.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's both.
Yeah.
I think it's a balance. Like, you can't just assume that you're just like constantly spitting fire, you know?
Yeah.
But you also can't be like treating yourself like a piece of shit.
It's tough because you see successful people treating themselves really poorly all the time.
Yeah.
And it's easy to go, that's obviously why they're so good at what they do.
Yeah. I mean, I talk about this a little bit in the book. Like, you look at someone like Michael Jordan, he was clearly a collector of slights and grudges and resentment and like totally manufactured feuds as a way to fuel himself. And I just think like we kind of know where that comes from. There's this moment when he's like, he says he's cut from his high school basketball team. Really, he just didn't make the varsity basketball team as a freshman or a sophomore, which is like not supposed to happen.
Right.
It's like, I didn't get kicked out of Harvard. I didn't get accepted to Harvard. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's not how it works. You can't just make that up. But he comes back the next year and he makes the team and obviously he leaves this guy in the dust. But it's like, he tells himself it's because he like, you know, stewed on it and he shoved in the coach. He also grew like 7 inches in the offseason. Like, that's a sample size of one. And he used it to direct the whole course of his life. And it might have nothing to do with, like, do you know what I mean? Like, we can take like these singular interactions. It's like somebody cheats on you and you're like, women lie.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And it's like, that woman lied
to you about something, not lied about everything the whole time.
Meanwhile, you were also lying,
and
also she actually tried to tell you the truth, and you refused to hear her.
Yeah.
You know, like, so anyways, we take these, like, singular things, and then we extrapolate out these, like,
massive stories.
Yeah, and so I think causation and correlation are definitely not the same thing. So, like, the fact that there's great people who break themselves down on film and are horrible Jimi Hendrix was also a drug addict, and so was Kurt Cobain. Like, right. Was that healthy or deeply unhealthy?
Right, good point. Yeah, I think it is hard to separate high performers from some of their negative habits.
Yeah.
And that sounds really obvious, because we have, I'm sure, mutual friends where we go, wow, he would be so much better if he didn't, like, shit-talk everyone or, like, drink too much.
Yes.
But people from an external perspective who don't know them that well might be like, oh, you know why Jordan's so good at what he does is because he, like, blows rails of cocaine every night. So, of course, he reads 17 books a week. Like, he has all this time. He doesn't sleep.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, in medicine, there's this idea of comorbidity. Like, there's things that, like, depression and addiction, they don't really cause each other, but they are comorbid. They come along with each other, just like obesity and depression. And like, there's all these things that are comorbid traits. And so, I think drive or ambition or talent is often comorbid with a lot of negative things.
Yeah.
So like, for instance, the desire to always focus on the next thing, that's like something I have. Like, I got the sales number this morning for the new book, but I'm also I'm not like, this is wonderful, let's have a nice dinner.
Yeah, I'm the same
like,
way.
I'm not only not reflecting, I'm actually busy negotiating like the next one, right? And so, in some respects, it's obviously served me very well. That's why I'm always stacking projects. I know I have a lot of dead time. But that also prevents me from enjoying the thing. And so, like, for champions, I'm not calling myself one. I'm just, like, in sports, that desire to never be happy with what you did, even if you broke a world record or won the Super Bowl, obviously you can see why that, like, makes them a champion. But it also means that they never feel like a champion.
Yeah, I find this too, and again, we're far from Kobe Bryant, and you know, I don't have any rings to show for this, but yeah, we got named like best of 2018 by Apple, and people were sending me messages, and I remember being like, I wish all these texts would stop breaking my focus because I'm working on something, and friends of mine were like, you must feel great, and I actually felt worse by them saying that, because I was like, well, I don't really. I mean, it's good, but I don't feel good, and it also makes me question, where am I going to be in like 30 or 40 years? Am I ever going to sit down and like enjoy the fact that I've achieved stuff, or is it just going to constantly be this way? It's a little scary, actually.
Yeah, no, it is scary. It's scary. It's certainly a first world problem.
Yeah, of course.
But it's like people just don't really talk about how to cope with that or deal with it. And I think one of the downsides of not talking about it is not only do we not solve that problem, but like people become convinced, you go, oh, the problem wasn't that I can't enjoy being named the best. It's that I was not the most downloaded.
Mm-hmm.
You go like, I'll feel better if I get that.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Or you go, oh, this Super Bowl was nice, but like I really want to be in the club of people who have won back-to-back Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
Or like Kevin Durant. It's like he won all these rings with the Warriors, but he's like, now I got to win one for myself. You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, you know what it's going to feel like when he gets it? If he does, it's going to feel exactly the same.
Yeah, sure.
And it's going to feel not good because that, like, that's the curse of being great.
Yeah.
And so it's I guess what I'm talking about in the book and what I'm working on myself is like, and maybe it's not possible, but like, I think that it is. It's like, can you get to a place where you do really great work and you perform at an elite level, but you do it from a good place? In Buddhism, they say like craving is the opposite of stillness. Like anything that's coming from craving is bad.
Well,
it's not that sex is bad. It's that like the craving is bad.
Right,
like the need. And the Stoics talk about this too. They say like a wise man can use many things, but he needs none of them. It's the need, the place of need that's the delusion, because you're saying if I get this, if this, then that. Can I write a great book, and can I continue to write great books, and can I have a career where I, you know, perform at an elite level where I'm doing it not to prove anyone wrong, not because I'll be happy if I get it, you know, not because I want to have this amount of money or I need this amount of Instagram followers, you know, like, can I just actually be in it and do it and come from there, not from like, just that darker place.
Mm-hmm. How do you make that shift? It's not like I don't know that if this happens, I'm saying if this, then that. Hey, look, if I get 100,000 more listeners over the course of the year, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Our revenue is going to go like this. I'm doing if this, then that. But I've already played this game before. I've been doing this for 13 years. Like every year, it's a different goal. And every year I feel the same way.
Yeah.
And I'm happy looking back, but I'm not like satisfied. ever. So yeah. Is there a way where you then go, you know what, this is unhealthy, clearly banging my head against the wall and doing this, the craving is still there, that part's still unhealthy, you know?
Yeah.
Or is this just another if this then that? Well, if I can get this craving to stop, then I'll be healthy and I'll be able to enjoy myself. That's a, it's the exact same thing. Inception.
No, I was talking to Pete Holmes about this. He was talking about how, like, he and his wife, like, sometimes fantasize, like, what if we could have a farm? And I was like, I have a farm.
Yeah.
It's not that great.
Like, it sounds awesome. You have a lake.
Right, it's great. Pond. But it's not like, we got it. I thought it was going to be my dream house. And then the next thing I'm like, well, I don't really like the floors. And, like, I really dislike how it's laid out. Like, that you're always going to do that. So he was like, what we've slowly realized is like, this is the farm. Where we currently live, that's whatever the fantasy is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's actually a mantra I have in I try to say to myself all the time, like, this is enough, or like, this is it. There's not some other thing. Like, there's just this. So I think presence is kind of the antidote to what we're talking about. Because, like, when you're thinking, like, oh, I just need to get 100,000 listeners, or if I can just get the revenues up to the seven figures.
Yeah.
Like, for me, like, I tend to think I have this sort of insecurity. So it's like contracts. Like, if I could just get this locked up, then I can count on
it.
Or if I can just have this amount of passive income from this, like, then I won't feel like I have any financial needs. And it's like, that's not how that works.
But
just going like, this is it. This is enough. That's like kind of a mantra I try to repeat to myself. And the reason I think it works is that doing a great interview with Malcolm Gladwell or trying to write a book or trying to give a talk in front of this audience is hard enough.
Yeah.
How arrogant is it to think you can do that while also using 5% or 10% or 50% of your mind over here to think about how you're going to get more subscribers?
Do you know what, it's a waste.
Well, it's not just a waste. It's just like you're cheating the performance.
Yeah, that's true.
Like you're not giving 100% to the thing. So like in a way, it almost makes what you've, because we all do it, it makes what we managed to accomplish more impressive. We're like, how'd you manage to hit all these home runs while also fantasizing about the next 3 years of your career?
Right.
Like, what could you have hit two more home runs with the cumulative amount of mental energy that you wasted thinking of far ahead?
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Ryan Holiday. We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored in part by HostGator.
People always ask us how many business cards they should get printed before their next big networking event, and we tell them the same thing every time. Business cards may have been a state-of-the-art way to connect in 1957, but you know what's truly timeless here in 2019? Having your own website. I'm not talking about Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, MySpace, or whatever social media accounts you've collected over the years. I'm talking about a website you can call your very own and share with the people in your network. You may cringe at the idea because it sounds like something that's A, expensive, B, complicated, and C, a lot of work to maintain. But our friends at HostGator know a thing or two about making the process simple from start to finish because they've been helping people just like you since 2002. HostGator's 99.9% uptime guarantee and around-the-clock support ensures your website is available to the eyes of the world every day and night of the year. Got a tight budget? No worries. As long as you're a new user, you get to try any HostGator package for up to 62% off the normal price just for hearing the sound of my voice. And if you're not completely satisfied with everything HostGator has to offer, you've got 45 days to cancel for a refund of every last penny. Check out HostGator.com/Jordan right now to sign up. That's HostGator.com/Jordan.
This episode is also sponsored by Mint Mobile. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers in 2019, have you asked yourself what you're paying for between expensive retail stores, inflated prices, and hidden fees? You know, actually, Jason, this is funny. I was talking with Scott Adams today, and he has this interesting term that you will love, confusopoly.
Nice.
And it's, I don't even think he made it up. Basically, mobile phone companies are the poster child for this term. It's pretty self-explanatory, right? Like, they make it so damn confusing that you don't actually know what you're getting for your money, so it becomes impossible to compare. It's like when you log into your cable provider, it's like you get these channels, but not these channels, but then sometimes you'll get this, but this is bonus, but then you get this, but only the online version. And it's like, what? But then you can't log in on your iPad. You can only do it on your phone. It's just weird. So it's a confusopoly. Mint Mobile's like, no, we're done with that. They provide the same premium network coverage that you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is done online, you know, kind of like every freaking other thing in the world these days. So they save on retail locations. There's no overhead for that stuff. They pass the savings on to you as the customer. and they make it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month. And I know what you're thinking. Well, there's probably no good data, nothing like that. No, every plan is unlimited nationwide talk and text, and you don't have to pay for unlimited data you'll never use. You can use 3, 8, 12 gigs of 4G LTE data. That's the fast stuff, by the way. So use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan. You're just buying a SIM card in the service here. Keep your number, keep your contacts, ditch your old wireless bill, and start saving with Mint Mobile. Jason?
To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get it shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/Jordan. That's mintmobile.com/Jordan. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Jordan. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. And to learn more and get links to all the great discounts you just heard from our amazing sponsors, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. Don't forget, we have a worksheet for today's episode, so you can make sure you solidify your understanding of the key takeaways from Ryan Holiday. That link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. If you'd like some tips on how to subscribe to the show, just go to jordanharbinger.com/subscribe. Subscribing to the show is absolutely free. It just means that you get all of the latest episodes downloaded automatically to your podcast player, so you don't miss a single thing. And now back to our show with Ryan Holiday.
That distracted feeling is so toxic. Whenever it happens, when it happens during an interview, or whether I'm being interviewed or talking to somebody else like you, I almost like taste motor oil when I'm like, oh,
really?
God. Yeah, it's not literally, yeah. But I just feel the pull. The pull is a great word because I'm over here and I have to like beat that worry out. It's like getting an email from your lawyer right before you have to give a talk and you're just like, crap.
I shouldn't have checked this.
I shouldn't have checked this.
Yeah, and we do that mentally. So my thing is I don't check my phone in the morning. I don't use it as an alarm clock. Don't sleep within the room. And I try not to check my phone. When I'm at home, it's like a minimum of an hour. Sometimes, like, I'm on the road, like, it's like, I got to know if I have to, like, if they change the call time from this time to that. But, like, I don't check my phone in the morning. So I had to use my phone as an alarm clock because I'm staying in a hotel room.
Yeah.
Tip, first thing you should do when you get into a hotel room, unplug the alarm clock. You have no idea what horrible time some idiot sent it to.
Yeah.
And
4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I've had things where it's like I had 4 hours of sleep and I could get 4 hours of sleep and it was actually all ruined because the person before me set the alarm clock. But the point is, I had to use my phone as the alarm clock. So I went to go turn it off and I saw a bunch of texts from my agent about the sales numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell they were good. From the glimpse, I could tell they were good. Like, I wanted to check them. But I knew that's not the best way to spend the morning. Like, that would derail the morning.
For sure.
Because I'd spend, then I got to call these people, I got to see what they are, I got to have a conversation about it. I was like, my plan before I saw it was to wake up, go for a swim, write in my journal, and then get a little bit of writing done before I have to go do this thing.
Yeah.
And why am I going to let good news or bad news get in the way of that? And so that email from your lawyer before you go on stage is like, to me, is a great analogy because it's like we could be in the right headspace, but then we let other things jump in, either external news, internal news, or whatever, but it's just not where you should be. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to check this. I now am going to work to do this swim and actively not think. Every time it comes up, I'm going to push it away and I'm going to try to get back to whatever this experience would have been without peak. It's like, you know, there's a surprise party coming. And you're just going to try to forget that you know, right? You know, and it was work, but you have to be able to push those thoughts away because, like, there are going to be other times with other more serious things with higher stakes that if you haven't worked out that muscle, you're just going to be like, I just blew the opportunity of a lifetime because I saw a very unpleasant tweet from a total stranger because I was checking my phone when I shouldn't be checking my phone.
I know.
And blah, 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 blah.
I see that. And I think you're right. I think a lot of people who I find are overcome with anxiety, not everyone, of course, but a lot of these people, they have too much input and they just can't deal with it all.
Yeah.
And they need to not be on their phone or they need to not be checking it because everything causes like a fight or flight reaction in their life.
Well, look, the news, for instance, is not... There's no money in making you feel like everything's okay in the world.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, like, I think people just consume way too much news about everything. Like, financial news, political news, celebrity guy. Like, why are you consuming this information?
Got to be up to date.
Right. It's like, what?
For what purpose? So that you can, like, impress people at a cocktail party that you're not invited to?
Exactly. Anyway. Exactly. And no one ever goes, wow, Jordan, you're so up to date.
No.
You know?
Like, no.
You never feel like you don't feel like you get there either.
No.
And you don't do anything with this information. And most of the time, the consuming of the information actually makes you deeply unhappy mm-hmm. or distracted. So people think, you know, like, I follow the news to be informed. And it's like, meanwhile, how many books could you have read about, like, history or the human experience or wisdom or spirituality or whatever that would have actually made you informed in some sort of lasting way?
Yeah.
But just you talk to these people and you're like, okay, so you know about the ins and outs of this investigation, but you actually have no idea how our system of government works.
Right.
And you tell yourself you're informed, but how could you? You're not informed, you just know some trivia. And then meanwhile, there's this other person who hasn't turned on the news for 10 years, and they could just tell you exactly how this event is going to go.
Yeah.
Because they know how history works.
I assume maybe you're referring to this impeachment investigation that's going on. Somebody asked
me. Just any investigation, but yeah.
Somebody asked me the other day, oh, yeah, so things are heating up or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I don't really know. And they're like, oh, you're not following this? And I said, and I was so proud of myself for saying this. I've never uttered this. I said, I'm going to wait for like 5 years and then there'll be a book about it. I'll just read that. Because there will be. And I'll get a totally. Very well-rounded, complete 360 of the whole thing. And I'll know it. I don't need to know it now.
Well, think of the expression that you just said. I'm not following it. Why do we need to follow it?
Yeah.
We should go where it ends.
Right.
Right? And look, there are things where like if people are like, oh, I'm watching the debate because I need to decide who I'm going to vote for.
There's that.
Okay, so you have said that consuming this information is going to have an impact on a decision you're going to make. But most of the people who watch the debates know who they're going to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just watching crappy sports.
Yeah.
You know, like they're watching the worst sport ever.
Moderated
debates.
Yeah. It's moderated by Anderson Cooper.
Yeah.
I want Anderson Cooper to moderate no sports. Yeah. I think it's a really good point. It's just like a really boring, slow-paced game of nothing.
Well, and even think about it this way. Debates used to be, this is the debate. And different cable stations are all recording it at the same time,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, so it was an event being covered on television. Now it is an event being put on by television, right? CNN is inventing this debate. This debate was not going to happen without CNN. It's not like the Lincoln-Douglas debates where, like, a bunch of people were watching these two, you know, figures in Illinois debate each other, right? It's like this is a press conference, right? Which is done exclusively for the purpose of getting media attention.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. You're right. It's not necessarily a government function now.
MSNBC or CNN or Fox News going, man, we can get millions of people to tune into an event that we don't have to pay anyone to appear on.
Right. Yeah. Good point. There's no salaries for the athletes or anything. The advertisers involved are still going to pay a huge Super Bowl level premium, probably, if they even have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
You figured out what you wanted to do really early in life. You kind of mentioned that you'd thought about being a writer at age 19. A lot of people will write in and go, how do I know what I want to do? And
sure.
I'm like, well, crap. I'm the last person to ask. I'm still figuring it out. I'm 39 years old.
Yeah. I feel like that's it's like, how did you find the person that you were going to marry? That's like, I don't know.
Twitter.
You know, it just happened.
Yeah.
Like, you fell into it. And then I didn't say no to the experience. So I don't have like a great answer, although I think Robert Greene's book Mastery is probably the book I recommend most to people. And one of the things he talks about is he's like, you got to think back to your childhood, to that thing before money and pressure and like what your teacher said, before any of that, like what were you sort of like purely attracted to that got you going? You know, like what was that thing?
Mm-hmm.
And probably inside, like, I kind of think, like, what would you do for free?
Yeah.
What do you stare out of car windows and think about? I'm not saying that tells you the job, but it should give you a sense of, like, the ballpark of where this career thing is.
That's
so it's
true.
Like, I read lots of books. I really admire writers. Okay, probably something in publishing. You
mm-hmm.
know, maybe. And then it's like, where do your skills overlap with this? You're obsessed with baseball. You could be a GM. You could work in the marketing department. You could be a professional baseball player. You could be an agent. You know, you could be the guy that, you know, takes care of the field. Like, there's a lot of different things, but your sort of subconscious told you that, like, baseball was it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. Looking back at my own childhood, I tried to build an FM transmitter when I was, like, 9.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to talk on the radio. And it turns out it's illegal to attach a huge antenna to those things. You know, pesky FCC licenses. But I forgot about that for 20 years or something.
Yeah.
And then not quite 20 years, but yeah, close to it.
And for me with writing, I think the other thing is people go like, I love video games. I should be a professional video game player. You know, like it's not, don't just think of the most glamorous thing. I love podcasts. I should have my own podcast. It's like, where does that overlap with your skill set, right? And your background and what does the market need? I don't think I was like, I want to be a writer. I started, I love books. I love reading. I want to be around authors. And my first entry point into that was marketing for authors, particularly internet marketing and online sort of social media stuff, with which at the time was a very uncompetitive space and a very poorly understood space. And it was only in working with these people and meeting them and really figuring out how the process worked that it was like, oh, I think I could actually do this. Like, they're not, you know, maybe you go around basketball players and you're like, wow, these are like just totally different human specimens than me. I didn't have that feeling being around Robert Greene or the other authors that I worked for. I just got this sense that they had dedicated themselves to a different part of the craft and maybe I could do that.
Yeah, you could have easily been an editor at a publisher, reading other people's work and crossing things out dramatically, which is what I kind of imagine they do.
Yeah, yeah. It's mostly in Microsoft Word. So there's not a lot of crossing out.
Maybe
not
crossing out.
A lot of those comment bubbles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah, maybe it doesn't sound as fun at that point.
No, but you find that it's like we're in the studio. You're like, I love music. I love recording. Go get a job sweeping the floors in a studio. Because I was thinking about this with sports, because my books have become popular in sports. Like, I've met all these people, these sort of team psychologists or mental skills coaches for the teams. And I'm like, I really wish I knew this was a job. Maybe that's actually what I would have been really good at. Like, I'm writing is clearly what it is for me. But I was like, if you had told me at 19 that, like, there was a guy who worked for the Sacramento Kings who just helped them be better thinking about basketball, I'd be like, how do I go to school for that?
Right.
I didn't know that was a thing. But if my parents had helped me get a job as a ball boy, I would have needed to take a step towards the industry. And then I would have found out that that profession exists.
I feel like you are in school for that. You're going to write all these and then someone's going to be like, hey, come give a talk. And you'll be like, how about I give a talk every
all
week?
The time. Yeah.
Every week for a
well,
nice
you know,
fat
you know Dan Coyle? He wrote
Talent Code.
And Talent is Overrated, I think. He works for the Indians now.
Nice. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
That for me, that's like an alien world, you know, this whole sports thing. But I get it. I would have been really well served being like the coffee kid at a radio station.
Well, podcasting didn't exist.
It didn't
at first.
No.
But it was you following the space enough and messing around enough and being, and that's why, you know, in David Epstein's book about range, like, that's why you got to have all these different interests, because they converge together around something. And oftentimes, that's where new professions are created as well.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with that. Whenever people ask me how to figure out what to do with their life, the answer is always make a list of skills that you would like to learn. Go learn those and then figure out where you can apply them in different businesses. Doesn't even have to be the same thing.
Yes.
You know, if you if you want to learn Forex trading, you can go ahead and do that, but it doesn't mean you're going to be a Forex trader. You might be like at some desk working with an executive who happens to touch that business.
Yeah.
So, and that stuff tends to come together quite nicely. Like, this podcast never started as me interviewing people, as me talking about like how pathetic my dating life was literally 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm out of content. Maybe I'll do an interview with somebody else. And then I was like, that was the most fun episode I've ever done.
Sure.
So this slow evolution is the only way to do it. I think now people look at these things that they say online or that they see online or that they read in books and they go, oh, well, this person kind of, this fell into their lap or fell out of the sky. And it's also reinforced negatively by marketers who go, oh, my origin story? Crap, I need to come up with a good one. Here's this really smooth curve from me having like an epiphany and then meeting the right people, and then getting really lucky, and then here we are. And it's like, whoa, none of that happened. You're in the Army for 10 years. You don't even talk about that, or whatever.
Yeah, and Peter Thiel talks about how we have this inclination towards competition.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we go, like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. A lot of people are doing podcasts. I will do podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Because we think the fact that lots of people are doing it makes it safe. Right? When really the real gains and the real success in life usually comes from breaking some kind of new ground. So, like, look, I'm an author. Lots of people are authors, and it's like one of the older professions, I would say. But I write a different kind of book for a different kind of audience. when I was like, I wanted to write a book about stoicism, the publisher's not like, oh, yes, that is a very established,
it's a hot topic niche. Right, yeah. Now.
Right.
No.
And if they had, that might have been better for me in the short term, but much worse for me in the long term. So you want to think, the key is like, where do these diverse interests overlap and add up to something that doesn't exist?
Mm-hmm.
Like people go, I'm smart and I like arguing. I should be a lawyer.
That's
like
what
the
people,
worst one.
That's a hot topic,
yeah.
Because that's what everyone will tell you. And these,
yeah,
people who are not lawyers, they don't even know any lawyers.
Yes.
They're like, oh, and that's how I ended up in law school. Aunts being like, oh, you should be a lawyer. You know, you can get anything you want, kind of job you want with a law degree. And clearly you like to argue or be right. So you should do this. And it's,
yeah,
I think it was like Tucker Max wrote this whole post where it's like, this is why all of these things are wrong.
Yeah.
And that post is, end up sharing it a lot when people go, should I go to law school? I'm like, you should read this. Because the answer is, probably not when your mom,
right,
says go to law school based on all the stuff I've seen on NCIS Miami or whatever, or Law and Order. You know, these are not good representatives of what you're going to be doing on a daily basis.
Yeah, of course.
It's not going to be like JAG where you're flying in a jet and armed and chasing people down in Manhattan. You're going to be in a cubicle a lot of the time. If you're lucky, you might not even have your own cubicle. It's true, though, right?
Sorry for triggering you.
Yeah, no, I went off on a tangent there. It's true, though. I think a lot of people, they come up with an idea of what something must be like in their head, and they just, it's so unrealistic. We just assume that that's at least representative a little bit of reality, and it's not even close a lot of the time.
Well, one of the things I talk about in the book is, are you actually taking time to, like, stop and think about these things? So people are like, I'm going to be a lawyer. And it's like, how long have you thought about this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're saying I want to be a lawyer from the fact that your mom said you were good at arguing, and then, like, this guy down the hall from you is also applying to law school.
You're like, right. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Epictetus, one of the Stoics, he talks about, he's like, you got to take these impressions or these inclinations, and you got to, like, stop and put them to the test. Or, like, the other way is, like, stop, get out your glasses, put them on, and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Don't just look at the vague shapes and go, like, I think I know what this is. Really stop and think about it. Like, not, like, take the evening, but, like, think about it for, like, a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you know any lawyers? Or, like, do you know people that have done this? Like, what would happen if you actually were successful in this thing? What kind, like, I talk about this with people who are like, I want to do X. Or I go, like, but what do you want your life to look like?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that was, like, what I sort of realized, like, I really didn't like having a job where people could tell me what to do. So it's like, oh, so if I become more successful, when I was the director of marketing at American Apparel, it's like, okay, so what do you do next? Like, I'm probably not going to become the CEO of this company because it's, you know, run the way that it's run.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll go get a job at, like, I'll make a lateral move or a slightly higher move. I'll get the same position at a bigger, better company. And then it was like, wait, I'll actually be less happy because as chaotic as this company is, it does allow me to, it feels less like a job than a normal place. Success would be me actually moving further away from what I want my life to,
mm-hmm,
be. But when someone says, hey, I'll pay you $100,000 a year to do something that's the opposite of how you want your life to be, all you're thinking about is the $100,000.
Yeah.
You're not thinking, well, how much of that $100,000 am I going to have to spend to not feel like I hate my life.
Right, all of it. More, yeah, than all of it.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Or it's like, hey, I know you really love where you live. I know you have that your kids are in great schools and you have this great routine, blah, 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 blah. But, like, I'll pay you 20% more than you're currently making. And now you have to live in Buffalo, New York.
Yeah.
You know, not to hate on Buffalo, New York.
But you got to take your kids out of school.
Yeah, you have to
move your family.
Yeah, you have to do all this stuff and your quality of life will be lower. And what are you doing with said money?
Yeah. You know? Retiring early, maybe buying another vacation so that your family doesn't hate living
in Buffalo,
New York.
Or whatever. Like, so I think saying no to money is, like, extraordinarily difficult.
It is.
And I have a lot of trouble doing it and I don't do it enough. I had this experience where I got called back into American Apparel and I was a consultant in the turnaround and I sort of detangled myself from it. I got free. And I remember this is when we bought our farm and we were there and I spent all morning writing. And I got this unsolicited email from a very big tech company that was like, hey, we need sort of a CMO consultant to come in for like 4 months. It was going to pay a lot of money. There was like some stock, you know, options attached to it. Be a cool challenge. And I remember I took the call. And I negotiated some of the deal. And then I was like, but wait, I have to move to New York and I have to show up at a job every day. Mm-hmm. And I just worked really hard not to have a job.
Yeah.
Why would I say yes to this?
Because like, money. Yeah.
Because money.
Because money.
And like another, I mean, I wrote a piece about this for the Times, but I got a pretty decent offer for it to be a pretty high ranking, you know, figure in the Trump administration for one of the cabinet.
You did?
Yeah. This is like that in 2016.
It is ironic.
Yeah. It was very strange. They had not, I'm not sure it would have come all the way to pass because like, I don't think I'd been vetted yet. And I think they would have realized like where I stood. But the point was like, I remember asking guys like, do I have to live in DC? He was like, yes. And I was like, what do you get paid? And he was like, you know, not that much.
Jack squat.
Yeah. And then I was like, and what about like all the other things that I have, like books and my investments? And he's like, all those have to go in like a blind trust and you can't touch them. And so it was like, boom, boom, boom. And then he was like, so are you interested? And I was like, yes. You know, like, because it was like in every way, it was the opposite of what I wanted. But it's really hard to say no to things.
It is.
And we don't take the time to think about them. So thankfully, I took the time to think about it. And when I laid it all out and I talked, like, this is why I think being in relationships is so important. If I was single, I probably would have jumped off that cliff, right?
Sure.
You're not able to think long term enough.
Sam was probably like, I don't want to move to DC. They have winter there.
Yeah.
That end of story.
She's more like, you know, this contradicts all the things that you like, right? You know, and you're, yeah, but.
But how cool would it be? Secret Service will drive us around.
Yeah. But you don't understand. It's also a huge pay cut. Also, I'm ideologically opposed to everything they stand for.
You know? And I can't do any business or anything.
Yeah.
And I can't work on any other projects like the ones I love.
But it's like, people are, what are you doing next? What about this? What about, it's really hard to be like, this is my thing. This is what I'm doing. And to have the patience and the discipline to go to actually weigh the opportunities or the options against whatever that rubric is. And people just don't do that. And that's why they plunge ahead into stuff that makes them miserable or ruins everything they have.
It's true. You know, and the most important time to make those decisions is usually when you feel like you don't have time to make those decisions. So like when I was a lawyer, we had this economic downturn of 2008 and everyone went, oh my God, we have to find new jobs. And even I did that. And I even interviewed at some other places. And then I was like, wait, I'm working so hard to get another job that I don't even want. But all my colleagues were like, dude, you're not going to have a paycheck pretty soon. You have law school loans. You've got to repay that. What are you going to do? You're just going to, and I'm like, literally anything else? I would do anything else. Maybe I should go to the police academy. And they're like, you're crazy. They all scrambled and found new jobs. And now, of course, they're like, oh man, this
right.
Big
they
law
doubled
sucks.
Down.
They doubled down.
No. So, this idea of like, look, I'm going to really stop and think about this. It's not just about making you more conservative. It's not like you only say no to things.
Mm.
It also helps you plunge ahead on things that other people are afraid of. So, like, when I dropped out of college, I was terrified of it. You know, there's that like, hell yes, hell no.
Yeah.
Like all the big moves of my life have failed that test. And I was really scared about it. And so I ended up deciding to do it. And I remember I went in and I was like, I'm ready to drop out. And they're like, that's not how this works. Like, it's much more gradual than that. Like, you know, just take a semester off. Anyways, because I'd done that, because I had some experience taking a leap like that, when I decided I was going to like walk away from like a very good lucrative corporate track to be a writer, I was able to go like, oh, I can always just go back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that was the interesting. I thought I was dropping out of college and they're like, you can always come back. And I remember someone told me, they're like, when I was in college, I got sick and I missed a year of college. And he's like, do you know how many people have ever asked what happened?
Yeah, zero.
Yeah, they're like, why did you go to college this year and then graduate 5 years later? It was like literally never come up. He's like, I don't even think about it.
Yeah, I had mono. Okay, next.
Right.
Retired.
And so we look at these things, we're super intimidated by them because they seem scary because they're unknown. You're suddenly like, I'm going to live under a bridge somewhere. Mm-hmm. Or I could get murdered or, you know. And it's like, this changes nothing. Like, it's not scary at all once you break it down. So at the core of Stoicism and in the story I tell the book, like the beginning of Mr. Rogers, which you're almost going to have to start watching.
Oh, I watched that documentary 2 days ago.
So,
such a coincidence.
You'll start watching the show now that you have a kid. But like the beginning of the show, it's a flashing yellow light, mm-hmm. which is like slow down, like look carefully, right? And we have to be able to do that in our lives, particularly when stuff is coming like a mile in a minute. Like just because someone sent a tweet to you doesn't mean you have to respond with the first thing that comes into your head. Just ignore it.
Yeah, probably shouldn't do it at
all. Or you could wait 24 hours. You know, like this stuff feels like it's real time, but 20 years ago, they would have written it to you in a letter, you know?
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Ryan Holiday. We'll be right back after this.
This episode is sponsored in part by Xero. We've been using Xero. It's a cloud accounting software. I've been using it forever. In fact, when it first came out, we thought, wow, this is the iPhone of accounting software. It's that disruptive. It's fast. It's intuitive. It's super easy to use, even for people that don't want to do any sort of software accounting stuff at all. Xero makes this so painless. And a lot of our entrepreneur friends use it. It's great for business that's online. It's great for business that's not online but has any sort of digital component at all, which I assume is every single business ever. You can give access to an unlimited amount of users, so you're not swapping logins with people that work for or with you, and they can have limited access to what's in there. You can also pay by month, so there's no contract. So if you're just not sure about it, or you're wondering if you're going to need something bigger, smaller, or not use it at all, no problem there. They're from New Zealand, so they're good people. That's what that means. I'm pretty sure that goes without saying. 24/7 support. So you can mess up anything at any time, and they will set you straight before your boss finds out what you did. Or what you did to yourself. So you can also view things from the iPhone or Android app, and this helps when you need to check your dashboard in an Uber on the way to the airport. So try Xero risk-free at Xero.com/Jordan. That's Xero with an X, Xero.com/Jordan for a free month, and you can thank me later. This episode is also sponsored by 8Sleep. Man, I got to tell you, Jason, this 8Sleep that you and I have been harping on about is even better when you've got a baby. I got to tell you, like, you've been sleeping like a rock. I've been sleeping like a rock. But since it does cooling and heating, Jen will preheat the side of the bed and will give Jaden a bath. And then I can still cool down my side because it's 8,000 freaking degrees in the house no matter what. And I'm always warm now. I don't know what's going on there. But it's great because we basically have the heated bed. So she's comfortable. The baby's comfortable. I'm comfortable. And I'll tell you, man, my sleep scores are through the roof. What's been your experience so far? I know last time we talked, you love this thing.
Oh, yeah, man. I've got it set for the dogs on one side, me on the other. And now I've been tweaking my settings. So now it warms up in the morning and it's blowing my sleep score because I'm nice and toasty warm right when I'm supposed to get out of bed. And it's dinging me because I want to stay in bed longer because I'm comfy. What's up with that? I lost 3 points today. I got a 97. I could have gotten 100, damn it.
Well, you never were an overachiever. So.
That's right.
What you can do with this that I love is you can set the temperatures to raise and lower throughout the night automatically, and it learns. So it's not just like hot or cold. You can say, hey, in the middle of the night, I get cold, so start heating up around 2, 3 a.m., and it'll just do that automatically. And if you're like me, you can have it cool down enough in the morning that you kind of just want to get out of bed because you're freaking cold. So you can do whatever you need to do to get started in the morning. Jason, tell them where they can get a nice deal on the 8Sleep.
Right now, you can get $150 off your pod and free shipping when you go to 8sleep.com/Jordan. That's 8sleep.com/Jordan, E-I-G-H-T, sleep.com/Jordan, for $150 off your pod and free shipping.
This episode is also sponsored by me. Well, not sponsored at all, actually, but I'm going to prison for my birthday in 2020, February 26, 2020, and I'm bringing a bunch of you suckers with me, hopefully. It's at High Desert State Prison in Susanville, California, which is near Tahoe / near Reno, and it's a donation thing. All the proceeds are going towards an educational program for the inmates. I'm not keeping any of it, I promise. You're not even going to pay me. It's going to go directly to the group that's running this. And the donation amount is approximately $1,000, give or take. We're going to see no kickbacks for me. Plus, it goes to transportation. We're going to have some meals. There's going to be a photographer there. It's just going to be a great thing for all of us. I've done this before, not on my birthday, but I've gone to programs here. It's just, I know everyone says their thing is life-changing. This really was something I thought about and still think about all these months later. And the price is priced to fund one inmate through the educational training program at Hustle 2.0. So if you're interested in unique experiences and you want to come to prison with me and, I don't know, 50, 100 other people on February 26th, we're probably going to fly into Reno February 25th. I'll send you the deets. Just email me prison@jordanharbinger.com. That's prison@jordanharbinger.com. And I will send you some more info as it becomes available. I think it's going to be really fun. I'm really looking forward to it. We got a lot of cool people in my circle coming as well. And I really am excited to meet a bunch of you show fans as well, behind bars. I think it'll be a great time, as weird as that might sound. So shoot me a mail, prison@jordanharbinger.com, if you're interested in joining us.
Thank you for listening and supporting the show. Your support of our advertisers keeps us on the air. To learn more and get links to all the great discounts you just heard so you can check out those amazing sponsors, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. And don't forget the worksheet for today's episode. That link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. And if you're listening to us on the Overcast player, please click that little star next to the episode. We really appreciate it. And now for the conclusion of our episode with Ryan Holiday.
Mr. Rogers is an interesting case study. Why did I watch that recently? Is it in the book?
It's in the book, yeah.
Oh, that must be why, yeah. I watched it, because I don't remember what jogged that. He's amazing.
I haven't seen the documentary.
Oh, man.
Because sometimes you kind of get this, like, professional jealousy about things. So, like, I started writing this book in 2016, 2017, like, before the Mr. Rogers resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the only books about him were these, like, two obscure self-published books by, like, friends of his. Mm-hmm. And there was not a lot of stuff out there. And so I sort of fell in love with it, and I was writing all about it. And then it was like a Tom Cruise movie, or a Tom Hanks movie.
Oh, that would be good.
Okay. The action, it's an action film.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. Mr. Wright, it's the one that follows his story in that chain letter that everyone got that said he's a Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Starring Tom Cruise.
But no, then there's a movie, and then there's a documentary. I was like, you know what? Like, I want to preserve, like, whatever the headspace I have about this thing is. But, like, I think he's, like, one of the greatest people of the 20th century.
Definitely agree. Yeah, we don't really have sainthood anymore.
Yeah,
maybe we will in a few hundred years.
But he would be a good saint.
He was a minister. Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. He was.
Yeah.
He has kids. I'm so desperate to know, like, what he was like when he was super pissed off.
They talk about that in either the documentary or in the books.
He was
kind of mischievous. Like, he would, like, when he would want to say something inappropriate, he'd, like, do it in one of the voices
of
the puppets.
He did it, yeah, in King Friday's voice.
Yeah. I bet he was a totally normal human being.
Yeah.
I mean, he would swim every morning.
I saw that.
He was just, like, a normal guy, but just also an incredible person at the same time.
It's got to be so hard to just talk to kids and be measured. Not that he only talked to kids, but
yeah.
His whole life was geared towards talking to small children. I don't know if I could do that.
But there are these anecdotes about him just, like, meeting people and just, like, having whatever that, like, sort of angel-like energy is, and he could just, like, go to the core of who they were. I actually think it's more like he had some energy that was so special that it would work on anyone, and that it would work on kids mm-hmm. is a sign of just how powerful it was.
You know,
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. Basically,
like Caesar Milan or something.
Yeah, yeah. He's like the kind of guy that birds probably land on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And it just so happens to mesh well with children, so he decided to speak to children.
Because it's so rare.
He had a talk show for adults, and I'm dying to get
really?
My hands on it. I know.
Yeah.
I cannot find it. It's not anywhere easily accessible. I'm sure it's on reel-to-reel tape somewhere in the basement of, like, CBS or whatever.
There's this story.
PBS.
There's a story where he gets, like, a Lifetime Emmy or something,
mm-hmm.
and he goes up and he gives a speech, and he's like, I have about 30 seconds to talk, but instead of talking, I'm just going to look at my watch here, and I'm going to give you 20 seconds mm-hmm. to think about someone who meant something to you.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. Who comes up with that? That's incredible.
Yeah.
But I think about this, like, the energy that it takes to interact with kids or animals. Like, Caesar Milan obviously is someone who's operating on, like, a totally different level mm-hmm. than the rest of us. But, like, my son goes to this daycare, and these two Cuban ladies put, like, 15 toddlers down for a nap simultaneously every day. We have trouble putting one toddler to nap. You know, he's, like, running around. I don't want a nap. I hate naps. Like, you got to strap in the car and drive around. Like, imagine doing 15 kids who are not your kids.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Simultaneously. Like, if you want to talk about stillness, like, think of the energy and the calmness and the discipline that you have to do something like that. And I think those people have something that we should all study very seriously.
How do you start studying habits of people like that? What do you look for?
Well, I mean, habits is a great place to start.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, okay, what does Mr. Rogers' day look like?
Yeah, swimming.
Yeah, he gets up early. He prays. Like, he has some quiet meditative practice. He swims. He eats the same thing. Just even that he's doing the same thing. It's like, oh, he's simplifying,
mm-hmm.
right? So he's not picking up energy from like, where do I have lunch? You know, what time does the show start? Should I work out today? Yes or no?
Yeah.
You know,
he only has three sweaters.
Yeah.
We've seen them all.
Exactly. Or just even like, hey, this is the intro to the show. I mean, it's his show. He could have changed it up every time, but he's like, no, like routine. You do something for once, you did it once. You do it for a week, whatever. You do it for a couple months, it's a routine. But you do it for 30 years, it's like a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
You almost become entranced by it. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence someone like that is also deeply spiritual or religious. I'm not saying you have to believe in God. I have trouble getting there myself. But just like, oh, it's his sort of vulnerability and his almost willingness to submit to something larger than himself. Mm-hmm. It's probably the key to a lot of that humility and that stillness. It's got to be a part of it. It can't be an accident.
Yeah, I think you're right. I found a lot of people, myself included, have trouble staying or getting grounded, especially when we're all wrapped up in our work. And one thing that's been good for me is taking lessons in something that you're not good at.
Sure.
Because there's nothing quite like getting a voice coach or something for a professional, but even outside of that, like getting a Chinese teacher. Because in the workplace, we kind of have to sell ourselves all the time.
Right.
It's hard to go, oh, gee, I'm just not really that good at this, or I'm working on this and this, because you have to sell yourself as like the best man for the job. And so getting a teacher in something that you're not necessarily good at has actually been quite good for that. It sort of gets you in. And I'm not even talking about like this general student of life mindset. I mean, like looking at a actual skill that you suck at and hiring someone to tell you how to do it right.
Well, I talk about this a lot in the book, like the power of a hobby is that embodied, right? Like Winston Churchill after the First World War, he's like in the worst sort of spot in his career. And his sister-in-law gives him this children's paint set. And she goes, my kids seem to have fun. Why don't you try having fun? You know, and he falls in love with painting. And he paints something like 500 paintings in his lifetime. And he's not good. Like the paintings don't belong in museums because they're good. They belong in museums because of what the person who painted them was able to do through painting. Do you get what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, he was like defeating Hitler and he's like, here's a crappy landscape. It's like, well, you also were defeating Hitler at the same time.
But it's not like they're related. It's not like he's into BDSM. And it's a secret. It's like the process of painting.
It's a weird visual.
The process of painting and the relaxation that comes from it and the joy that comes from it and the presence that comes from it was what allowed him to manage the terrible stress that was the insane burden that he was under.
That's true, I think. And also to your previous work, I think getting feedback and criticism in an area that you don't have maybe a ton of ego attached to helps you go, oh, maybe I should consider doing that in this other area that is my whole life or that I have importance attached to.
And deciding that results are not the primary motivation for doing it. So like I've run and swam for a long time now and people are like, oh, are you training for a marathon? Or like, why don't you train for a marathon? And it's like, I'm not trying to get better at my hobbies. Like, I'm not trying to win. I am trying to get better at them. I'm not trying to win my hobbies. And I don't need any more competition in my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the win is that I made the time for it.
That's a good point. I think for me, with languages, for example, it's really clear because I can go to any bubble tea shop. There'll be a 7 or 8 year old or 10 year old, whatever, kid in there.
Yeah.
And they're speaking more fluently than me. They've got a fourth grade reading book and they're reading it and I need a dictionary to read that same book.
Sure.
And it's really hard to be like, I'm the best at this. It's like, nope, this child who can't even tie his shoes is actually better than you at this, right?
Yeah, now. Yeah, yeah. And how often do you get that as you become better and better at what you do?
Yeah, like it's rare.
There's fewer people who are like, Jordan, you're doing a horrible job.
Right.
You know, like you need to like get serious about this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. I actually just emailed Mark Maron the other day and he replied today and was like, I can't help you because I was like, hey, I'll pay you for some like consulting on interviewing. And he was like, I can't articulate what I'm doing. I can't be of any help to you at all. It's not that I don't want to do it. I just can't do it.
That's interesting. You reached out to him as not as a peer?
I was just like, hey, would you consider going through like your prep process, your interview process? And I obviously would pay you for that because otherwise he's just like, ugh, everyone's going to ask me to do this.
Sure, sure.
And I've done that with a few journalists and stuff, and a lot of them are like, yeah, let's do it. Come to New York and we'll do it. And Mark Maron was just like, I can't actually help you. I know this already.
Oh, interesting.
Thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I reach out to people like that all the time to try to get... It is hard to find somebody who's going to be at a higher level that's also willing to like sit down with you and help you do it.
I was thinking about this for something we're doing for Daily Stoic right now. So my books have sort of made their way through professional sport.
Yeah.
The amount of coaches who are like best in the world at what they do that like send me emails having read the books is like blown my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a reflection of me. It's a reflection of them. Most people don't read, right? Most people think they're good at what they do and they're good enough. Then there's a certain percentage of people that read. That's great. That's like self-improvement. But like what percentage of people are like, I wonder if there's anything more I can learn from this person?
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? I've been very impressed and inspired by the culture in sports of like, oh, this person's the best in the world at this thing that's vaguely related to what I do. I'm going to see if I can learn from them,
mm-hmm.
right? So sports in a way that a lot of business doesn't has a culture of like, hey, let's bring in speakers. I spoke at the University of Alabama maybe 3 years ago. Nick Saban sat in the front row and asked the first question after the talk, right? And like, I don't think that was a reflection of like how riveting my talk was. I think it was a reflection of one, he's trying to model to his players, like the idea of being a perpetual student. And then maybe there's a 1% chance that I'll actually have an interesting thing to say. And maybe he will learn something from the question. But the point is, like, he's not thinking, I'm Nick Saban. I'm the greatest coach in the history of collegiate athletics. Mm-hmm. What could you possibly show me? It's the exact opposite.
Yeah, that's interesting. And plus, I would imagine he found it through some other coach that maybe at some level competes with him or could have.
Yeah, maybe.
You've obviously talked with a lot of NFL teams and things like that. They're sharing it with each other, right? So these coaches aren't like, ooh, I'm not going to share this Ryan Holiday book. That's my little secret. It's everywhere.
No, and that's why I was asking about Marin. Like, I would think that you, given what you've accomplished, would be able to just say like, hey, Mark, do you have any advice?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's also cool that you offer to pay.
Yeah, I always do because otherwise problem is a lot of people have responded, oh, I wouldn't take your money. I would love to do this for you. The problem is I'm so busy for the next like 7 months. And I'm like, well, I bet you're busy doing things that pay you. So
right.
If I add money to the equation, maybe it speeds the timeline up 6 months.
That's true.
You know? And also if you pay, you get a lot more than just like a 2-line email of advice generally.
Yeah. No, that's true. I just hired, do you know John Beer?
Yeah.
He
emailed me about doing this.
Yeah. I worked with him on the thing. And it's like you have friends who are really great at stuff. And you're like, no, I want to pay you because you are the best in the world at what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Jack Taylor? He is like a great publicity firm, right? And like, I'm not going to ask you a favor as a friend. I want like the full thing.
The full treatment, yeah.
Yeah. And that's a weird thing. I think earlier in my career, I would have been like, oh, I got to get a deal. You know, it's like, no, actually like, expertise is expensive.
It is. Yeah, I'm the same way. I like to pay knowing that I'm going to get the full treatment. If somebody says, look, I'll do this for free because I only have 30 minutes of stuff for you, then fine. Yeah. I don't want an 8-week training program for free because it's going to just build resentment if it even exists.
What I figured out with my marketing business, because so few people actually were in a position, a lot of people wanted to pay for the full treatment. A lot of people actually were not a good fit for the full treatment. Mm. So I was like, here's what we'll do. You can buy an hour of my time and I'll tell you everything I think you should know and everything I think you should do. And then if it does make sense for us to work together, that'll just apply to the fee. But like we were talking about lawyers, I like the lawyer model, right? Of like, this is what an hour of legal advice costs.
Yeah, 6 minutes.
It doesn't have to be the like, oh, let's go through this big pitch dance and come up with this thing. And then I think we should be, in a way, we should be a little bit more transactional towards expertise and go like, this is what 30 minutes of Jordan's time costs about starting a podcast. Buy it or don't.
Yeah. And I'm happy to talk people out of doing it. That part's free if you're at an event where I'm giving a talk. I'll talk you out of doing a podcast if you...
Please. Yeah.
That's because
you've talked me out of it.
Did I?
Well, yeah, we talked about this, but yeah.
Oh, at MMT or something? Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm referring to. I go to these events and they're like, talk about podcasting. I'm like, let me save all of you a lot of time.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
I do the same thing. You should not write a book.
Yeah. We talk about this sometimes in text where I'm like, here's a book. What could this possibly be about?
And
it's like, it should never have been written. This is one of those books where they wanted a book so that they could say, I have a book.
People want the results of having a book.
Yeah.
And I think they want the results of having a podcast. But they don't actually want a thing.
That's true. Yeah.
And I think about that, like, now I have a podcast that's on my terms that I like. So for Daily Stoic, I just read the email every day. So it's like a 2-minute podcast.
Yeah.
It not only doesn't take my eye off the ball of what I like doing, which is writing, but it complements the writing.
Sure.
Like, it's just bringing the writing to people who don't like to read, you know?
That's a good point.
And so it's been wonderful. And, like, there might be some, like, maybe there's 50 people that I want to interview at some point, and maybe I'll do that. But it's like, what I don't want to do is be interviewing 5 people a week, because it's not what gets me out of bed in the morning.
It'll keep you up at night, though, I'll tell you that.
That's actually a great contrast.
Yeah.
People do, not only do they not do things that get them out of bed in the morning, but they do things that keep them up at night.
Yeah, there's something clever in there, right?
Yes, there is.
A clever way of phrasing it.
Maybe that should be your book.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah, I'll work it. It's a kind of a long title. All right, in closing, I'm wondering what keeps you driving so hard at your goals, but I know it sounds like a stupid question, but on the one hand, there's a lot in Stillness is the Key about how success is ephemeral. Our goals are not really that meaningful, or at least not as we previously thought. Then you look at your kids and you're like, wow, nothing I do matters except for raising this kid.
Sure. But then you still show up for work every day.
Yeah, and like you're doing a crazy long book tour to try to get this thing going and get it into people's hands. So I guess what I'm asking about is like, what daddy issues do you have that are all coalescing
in this
book tour?
I got a lot of them. I do feel like a lot of very successful men, maybe it's women too, but I only know about the male experience, but it's like, daddy, can you please be proud of me now?
Yeah, finally.
It's not going to happen. Like, if you have to say that, it's not going to happen. There are people who become president, and then their parents are like, but you weren't as good as FDR, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, so I got a little bit of that. But I think there is this fear. People think, if I'm content, if I have some idea of enough, I won't make good work anymore.
Yeah, I'll lose my edge.
Yeah.
Same with humility. Ego is the Enemy had something like this. Like, and I'm totally guilty of this. We think if we're humble, we're totally screwed, because then your edge is gone.
I would dispute whether the hunger is the edge.
Mm.
Like, so I do have some issue that makes me not want to rest between books, like always have one. And there's a part of me that always wants them to be bigger. The risk of oversharing, I'm in the middle of negotiating this deal for the next book. And I saw my dad and I was like, Dad, like, isn't this a very large number?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, you shouldn't think about it today, you know, or something like this. And then later he was like, how much do you think this house cost? You know, like, he wanted to talk about anything but that thing.
Yeah.
And there's a part of that, right? Like, there's clearly a part of that that drives me a little bit. But I don't want to be driven by it.
No.
So maybe that's what created 9 books in 7 years as opposed to 4 books in 7 years or whatever. But the actual books themselves, that's not an edge. That's the opposite of an edge. The craving or the need is not making them better. If anything, it makes them worse because you're trying to rush through them.
Sure.
So, like, really you want to be coming at it from a place of, like, I actually, like, really have something I want to say. Like, I really love this. Like, and this goes to the Robert Greene thing. I would do this for free. Like, even if I wasn't getting paid, would you do it for free? So I do talk about how, you know, you have to have some idea of enough, and that, like, success is ephemeral and no amount of external accomplishment is going to fill a hole in your soul. But I don't think that's the same thing as genuinely loving the process or the craft of the thing. Like, I feel like if someone handed me $1 billion tomorrow, all that would do would make my books better.
You'd have a nicer desk.
I'd have a nicer desk,
that's
but
it.
I'd also probably even be writing from a slightly purer place. You know, I'd still
for sure. Oh yeah,
I'd still be writing. I'd be able to dictate terms slightly better. I could think longer term. So, like, to me, that's a sign you're in the right thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. If I had $1 billion, I'd be like, oh, cool, I'll just build my own studio and I'll fly everyone in first class. But otherwise, we're still sitting in chairs, like, shifting around after an hour.
Casey Neistat said that to me one time. He was like, you don't do the work to make money, you make money to do more work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a version of that that's unhealthy, right? Like, I got more, more, more. But there's also, it's like, no, I actually, like, this is the most satisfying thing. And the success is about encouraging and facilitating the chase of that meaningful experience rather than, like, the experience is a means to the end of having the stuff. I mean, like, you have kids or you zoom out a little bit, it does help you to go, like, there would have been a time where, like, if somebody ran in the room and was like, you got to stop, like, your son wants to go swimming, I'd be like, I have to finish this.
Right.
And now I go, I don't. Like, there's other things that are important. And if you told me I could trade a certain amount of books for having a really great family, I would take that trade in 2 seconds. Because it's not the output of the books that's important to me. It's that I just get to keep doing it.
I think it's hard for people who haven't done anything that they feel successful having done.
Sure.
Or maybe it's actually harder when you do have success. I'm not sure now.
Yeah, a lot of this is like, these weren't things I was wrestling with when I was 20. I was wrestling with like, how do I get my shot?
Yeah.
You know, and how do I not blow said shot?
Not be broke, yeah.
Right, but it eventually becomes an issue. And, you know, writing is, it can be a great profession. It's not one of those things where, like, I don't have to work anymore. Like, I do, yeah. I do have to pay bills, right?
Sure.
Like, and, like, my roof isn't free. So if I'm going to do something, I want it to be something that I like. It's also important that you make life decisions that don't force career decisions.
Ooh, that's good.
You know, like, yeah. People decide to live in New York City, or they decide they have to have two Teslas. Or, you know, that they have to fly first class everywhere or whatever. And then that makes it hard for them to make really good career.
Yeah, you got the golden handcuffs. You go to the big law firm, you buy the house in Nantucket because you're miserable in the city. And then you get a boat. And then you're like, well, I can't quit. There's a reason
that corporate firms will sometimes co-sign on mortgages for you. you know?
Geez, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because like they want.
That's evil.
You know?
Evil genius.
For sometimes CEOs, companies will loan them money. You know, so Upton Sinclair has this thing called the dress suit bribe. And it was always really powerful to me to think about. She's like, so you think like, oh, I paid, this is obviously from the early 1900s, like, you paid a quarter to have your shoes shined. But how much are you paid to have to shine your shoes, to have shiny shoes, right? And so he's like, you think they're taking you out to a fancy lunch, but really they're giving you a new baseline of what lunch is, right? And then this becomes this thing, and then you can't get out of it. Like, I was very lucky. On my first Stoicism book, like, I was paid fairly based on what people thought I could do, but I wasn't like, I could think long-term with the book because financially I'd make good decisions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And so that's another reason people are like, I'm quitting my job to start a podcast. It's like, really bad idea.
Terrible. Like, one of the worst. If the only thing worse than trying to make that podcast money is trying to get rich selling books.
Yes.
Like the,
yes.
There's actually
much better money in podcasts right now than there are in
books. Which is not saying a whole lot.
Right. But like, it's like, no, you have your job, love your thing, build a parallel track that eventually you can jump onto. It's like quitting your job to be a blogger. The kind of blogging you have to do to keep from starving is not conducive to the kind of reps you need to get great.
That's a good point. It's about the quality of the reps and not just making sure that you've screwed yourself over so that you have to do it full time.
Yeah.
14 hours a day blogging.
Yeah. People think there's something glamorous or, you know, sincere about like blowing up your life to start
the whole going all in thing. Oh, that's a whole different show.
Yeah.
Follow your passion, go all in, tell your parents to go screw themselves if they won't let you become an entrepreneur. All terrible advice.
Yes.
But probably advice for another time.
All right.
Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, who chooses the form factor for these books? Like, this
what
is small. Who chooses, like, oh, I want it to be a miniature version of a book?
Well, a
snack size.
So book. Obstacle is the Way, they were like, hey, what about this size? And I held it and I liked it. And I was like, that's great. And then what we realized is there's something really powerful about a smaller book that you could read in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why suddenly you do a 30-minute show and your downloads spike and you're like, oh, you know, like that's how I should do it. And so it was just a random chance thing, but there's a very distinct reason now that the three books are the same size, the same length, the same format.
They're going to look good in a box set.
A box set's coming next year.
I figured as much. That's good. That's your best of right there.
Yeah, it is.
All right, stillness is the key. I almost said The Way.
I'll take
it. I'm sure that's happened
also
before.
True.
Yeah, stillness is the key. Well, it's easier to find if you get the title right. It's much easier to find if you get the title right. Ryan, thank you very much, man.
Thanks again.
Thanks to Ryan for coming out and spending so much time with us. The book is called Stillness is the Key. Links to that will be in the show notes. There's a video of this interview on our YouTube channel at jordanharbinger.com/YouTube. And there are worksheets for every episode, including this one, so you can review what you've learned here today from Ryan Holiday at jordanharbinger.com in the show notes. We now also have transcripts for each episode, and those can be found in the show notes as well. We're teaching you how to connect with great people and manage relationships using systems and tiny habits over at our 6-minute networking course, which is free. That's at jordanharbinger.com/course. Don't do it later. Do it now. I know you think you're going to just do it when you have time. You got to dig the well before you get thirsty. Once you need relationships, you're too late. Procrastination leads to stagnation when it comes to your personal and business relationships. And you know that's true because it kind of rhymes. These drills are designed to take just a few minutes per day. This is the stuff I wish I knew decades ago. It's not fluff. It is crucial, and you can find it all for free from me at jordanharbinger.com/course. By the way, most of the guests here on the show, they subscribe to the course and the newsletter, so come join us. You'll be in smart company. Speaking of building relationships, you can always reach out and or follow us on social. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram. This show is created in association with Podcast One. This episode was produced by Jen Harbinger, Jason DeFilippo, and edited by Jace Sanderson. Show notes and worksheets are by Robert Fogarty, music by Evan Viola, and I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. Our advice and opinions and those of our guests are their own, and yes, I'm a lawyer, but I'm not your lawyer, so do your own research before implementing anything you hear on the show. And remember, we rise by lifting others. The fee for this show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting, which should be in every episode. So please share the show with those you love and even those you don't. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time. A lot of people ask me which shows I listen to. And of course, Kevin Rose has been a friend of mine for a long time. He has the Kevin Rose Show. He's been a tech investor early in the game and is now thinking about more important stuff like family and psychedelics and meditation and things like that that are... they're not trending for the sake of being trendy, but they're trending because they're important. And recently, you've got Tim Ferriss, who everyone's heard of, but hasn't been on a lot recently. What's he going to drop on your show, Kevin?
Yeah, well, Tim and I have been doing podcasting even before he had his show. We did a show together called The Random Show, where we'd get together and have a couple of beers and just talk about life, really. Like, a little bit different than his show in that, you know, no one ever gets a chance to interview Tim, and he's such a fascinating dude and has so many odd obsessions that he doesn't really cover, because normally he's interviewing other people for his show, you know? So
yeah.
When we get together, it's more just like a couple of guys hanging out and having casual conversation about what's going on in our life and relationships in our life and all kinds of crazy body experiments and different hacks that we're trying, because both of us are obsessed with trying these different techniques, whether it be like the cold showers that we do or the continuous glucose monitors or some extreme fasting. So this episode is going to be packed with all that type of information.
You can find that at kevinrose.com. And of course, we will link to that in the show notes as well for this episode, so you can go directly there. And the Kevin Rose Show, if you're searching in your podcast app, and you'll find him. It's the big picture of Kevin's face in the show art. Thanks, Kevin.